Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Happy Wednesday here, brought to you by our friends at Metro Rooter. Johnny O will be along this morning as we'll talk Jaguar football with you. And congratulations, Scott, to Jalen Ramsey, first rookie defensive back in Jaguar history to win Defensive Player of the Week honors in the National Football League, Tony. Almost a cumulative two-week award, I think, at this point in time. I think, you know, Jalen, despite what we see as a very solid rookie season, didn't have the splash numbers in terms of interceptions prior to the last couple of weeks that get your attention paid to you, I guess, on the national level. You look at some of the Rookie of the Year rankings that are out there. He hasn't been considered a top 10 guy for most of the way, no matter how well he's played. And I think all the pass breakups, the interceptions, you know, the grades that he's gotten from Pro Football Focus over the last four games, which we talked about yesterday, grading him as the top cornerback in the National Football League over that period of time, have turn people's attention to Jalen Ramsey. And that's part of the battle, getting on people's radar, unless you have such an absolutely ridiculous statistical game that everybody can recognize. For Ramsey to go out there and put up the numbers that he did and win Player of the Week, I think Jaguar fans probably expecting a lot more of that in the very near future out of Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, and I think, look, this is one of those, Ramsey already has, you know, household name value because of where he was drafted. A lot of teams were talking about him in the draft last year. Virtually anybody who was picking in the top 10, you know, that we talked to, they were like, well, if we can get Jalen Ramsey, we'd love to have Jalen Ramsey. Like, he was that type of player. He winds up falling to five, into the Jaguars' lap, wins his first Defensive Player of the Week honors. I think he's just the second Jaguars rookie to ever win that kind of honor. Telvin Smith, I think his rookie year, won it 1 week. So, look, these are the types of months that get you into everyone's consciousness going forward. It's that, no, he didn't make a Pro Bowl this year, and maybe he should have been more considered for it than he was. I don't know, when you look at the other guys who made the Pro Bowl. But next year, when you have this kind of month in December, it matters for the next year, too. I mean, having that kind of game, that kind of back-to-back games, being talked about the way that Jalen Ramsey is right now, is going to help his stock in everybody's mind going forward. Look, and I think for Jaguars fans, it's not like his stock could have gotten all that much higher with the way they were talking about him. When we talk to fans about who has been standing out this year, Jalen's at the top of that list, at the very top of that list, and is already a fan favorite here in Jacksonville. It's that everyone else is going to be noticing what he's been doing too.
And he's been playing well, but he's also given up plays this year. But I think when you put the stats to it, that everybody can recognize pass breakups. Okay, that means he got his hands on X amount of balls, as opposed to saying, hey, man, he just really was locking down so-and-so. Unless you watch the Jaguars play, you're really not going to know how well he's playing, and that's kind of one of the deals with the Pro Bowl. You got to have some statistical backup to get on the radar nationally, even if you have name recognition. And hopefully, like you said, this is a step in the direction of having him more in the public consciousness, and if he continues to improve his play next year, it may start a run of Pro Bowls for Jalen Ramsey. Today's fan feedback question of the day is going to focus on the quarterback position. However, you're certainly welcome to talk about Jalen, but I just want to get your thoughts on the QB position with a week to go. Regardless of what Blake does in week 17, how much confidence was restored in Blake Bortles in your particular eyes, in the listening audience, with his performance this week? Or do you view it as just a fluke or a one-off? Are you cautiously optimistic that it's a building block game? Look, it could be one of those complete out-of-the-blue games, and you could go back to throwing a couple of interceptions this week, having a low completion percentage, and throwing wobbly balls all over the place, and everyone's going to go into the offseason, I think, pretty much forgetting about Week 16, quite frankly, because the poor play has been more predominant throughout the course of the year. So that's our Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. How much did Blake's performance this weekend raise your confidence level, or do you think it's more on the flukish side of things? You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. Phone lines open to you all morning long at 641-1010. Same number on the text line, driven by Duval Ford. John Osier will be with us from Jaguars.com. When we return, we're live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey and Fat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Johnny O in the house from Jaguars.com on set with us here on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. Good morning, John.
Getting brought in with a little jet by Paul McCartney and Wings.
That's
how about
good.
That?
Very good pull by you right there.
Jet. Ooh, 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 ooh.
I like Wings.
I did. I grew up a huge Beatles fan, and I was more of a Lennon guy than McCartney, but I liked a few Wings. Like
it's not
the Run.
Nearly as good as the Bee Gees you were doing earlier this week.
I can throw out a little.
Yeah.
How Can You Mend a Broken Heart?
That's the best Bee Gees song of all time. That's one of the great songs
well,
of all time.
It. And it ain't happening right now.
You got three-part harmony right here. Come on, who's Robin? That's the only question. Yeah. I can't quite get up there with Robin.
Yeah, I channeled a little How Can You Mend a Broken Heart yesterday. That's not going to lie to you.
I love that song. I got Bee Gees' greatest hits in my car right now.
Well, I do not, but...
There you go. Staying alive.
But I did see them on the Flowing Rivers tour at the Jacksonville Coliseum in 70... Must have been 79 or 80.
Wish so. I had.
Yeah.
Back in the day. I just remember.
Andy Gibb came on for the encore. Big
oh,
moment.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
All the brothers Gibb were on
the,
hand.
The four brothers Gibb were on
including the
there
solo
doing,
act of Andy back in the day. He was very popular with the teeny bopper girls. I remember my sister was a big Andy Gibb fan.
I had the Flowing Rivers and Shadow Dancing LPs when I was that
Shadow
age.
Dancing.
Yeah. You know it.
Oh, of course.
I had it.
Yeah, I was a weird kid. Not that should be any surprise.
Well, I think I've just stated that I was.
So. Well, yeah, but I used to like, you know, before this pre-internet days for the youngsters out there, and I used to read – you know, I get my hands on as many newspapers as I could every day. And I always look as a kid, you know, you're looking at the comic strip, you're looking at the horoscopes, you're looking at different things. But I always look at the Billboard charts. They put them in there every week. They have the Billboard charts in the paper.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, the Saturday Night Fever album, they had, I think, a different song off that album, number one for.
Oh, I was hardcore into
it. Was
Casey's American
like
Top 40
eight
on Sundays.
Top,
you kidding me?
They had like seven or eight number ones in a row.
Yeah.
The Bee Gees did.
Dominated the charts.
They did dominate those disco
79.
Pop charts back in the day. Bring it. Here we go.
You know it, baby.
I do find it amusing that we always talk about you know, songs, misheard lyrics.
Sure.
You know, like I always thought My Eyes Adored You was Mine's in Georgia.
Sure.
Right? I never laid a hand on you. Mine's in Georgia, okay? Prosser thought that More Than a Woman was Bald-Headed Woman.
Yeah.
And once you hear it, you can't unhear it. Bald-Headed Woman.
I don't know.
Dude, looking out my back door.
And there's that.
I don't know if he misheard it, but my good friend Towson Frazier used to sing, I've never seen your pizza burning.
Is that right?
Instead of Beast of Burden.
But
I think he knew it. I think he was just being funny. But either way, it's good.
That was hilarious.
Either way, it's good.
It really was. All right, Johnny O. I'll start with you. Question of the day. Blake Bortles, how much confidence should Jaguar fans take away from that performance this weekend?
You know, I thought about this a lot as I was sort of writing and discussing the game. I don't think it's unfair to say that it probably doesn't give people confidence yet, because you've only seen it once. What I thought it gave you was some hope and a reason to see why people in the organization still believe in it. Does that make sense? I mean, you know, that
sure. We see what he's capable of doing.
Right. I don't think it's realistic to think that most Jaguars fans who have seen the course of the season, most people who have seen it, us, I didn't look at that game and walk downstairs to the locker room afterward thinking, all right, I know that this is the guy to lead this franchise. You know, I don't think Blake would say it. You know, he had one really good half where he was really sharp and did what you'd been hoping he would do for a long time, which was this. He played really, really well and was a big reason that they were ahead and in control of a game against a good team. Never done that. Not even last year when he was putting up some big numbers did he have a half or a game where you looked at it afterward and went, they won that game, and Blake Bortles was a huge reason why, and that was a pretty good team they beat. All those things are important. Now the question is, you know, you do it once, and now the next people who you play take away what you were doing well. Can you adapt? Can you keep doing those things? Can you do that? You know, an elite guy has to have that game 9 or 10 times a year.
Well, he certainly need to back it up with another good game against the Colts.
Sure.
Who likewise have nothing, quote unquote, nothing to play for in terms of playoffs or anything like that.
And in that sense, this is sort of a, you know, I don't want to overplay it. It's a high risk game in a sense for the Jags, because there's really nothing to be gained and everything to lose. If you win this, then all of a sudden you go into the offseason thinking, okay, we beat the Titans. That was a legitimate team playing for the playoffs. And they beat the Colts. You're 2-0. You're feeling good. If you don't, then people kind of go into the offseason thinking, ah, I beat the Titans. Man.
Right. Snap the losing streak. That's right. Nice and all that. But
right. So, and grand scheme of things, how much does the end of the season two-game winning streak? I get that they're 4-12 and all that. But if you're looking for some kernel to hang on to going into the offseason, then you want to be able to say, okay, you know, it's pretty rare to do what they did the other day, meaning you're a team that's absolutely out of it, and you're playing a team that has everything to play for, and a team that I thought was pretty good coming in. They had just beaten the Chiefs, who, you know, it would be a surprise if they're in the Super Bowl, but it's not unreasonable to think that team goes to the Super Bowl. Titans just beat them on the road the previous week, came in here playing better than anybody in the AFC South, and the Jaguars, you know, led the whole game. There was a little bit of a squirrely time right at the end where, you know, if the Titans get the ball back, they can go tie. You're a little worried about it. But for the most part, they controlled the game against a really good team. Haven't done that since the Ravens here in 11. So, I mean, you know, so don't necessarily – it doesn't mean anything unless you back it up. But it did have the feel of one of those games where the young guys go, okay, we can do that.
Right, you can do that, yeah. But at the same time, it's almost like, okay, show me that you can do that again. Everybody. Would you almost rather?
That's completely fair. But if they're good next year, or if they're even competing next year, this might be one of those where the young players go, yeah, that was sort of a turning point for us. And I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
That's right. Would you almost rather, as well as the defense has played this year, would you almost rather lose 42-39 and have Blake have another one of these type of games this week just to instill your confidence in your quarterback more so than you're worried about your defense?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I don't necessarily care if Blake puts up one of those Tennessee-type games from last year where he had 5 touchdowns. You know, a game where he throws high completion percentage like he did the other day in the first half with a couple of touchdowns. If he's 21 of 31 for 280 and 2 touchdowns, yeah, you know, people would feel good going into that a high efficiency game as much as a huge numbers game, because they've seen huge numbers game out of him before. He had that last year, but give me a couple of games in a row where he's efficient and he's leading a team that's in control of a game. That hasn't happened enough with him.
All right, let's go to the phones for the first time today, and you can weigh in on the question of the day on Blake and how much that performance helped your confidence in or restored it, or whether you're just taking a wait-and-see approach, whatever the case may be. Jalen Ramsey, Defensive Player of the Week in the AFC. We can talk about that as well, whatever is on your mind in regards to Jaguar football at 641-1010. Desmond on the north side starts us off this morning. Good morning, Desmond. How are you?
Good morning. How are y'all?
We're well. What's up?
I would like to say happy holidays to everybody. I have a question for Locke. Okay. The first round draft pick, you know, I know it's like 100 and some days away, but do you feel like we need to get a lineman or a safety or maybe even a pass rush? That's the first question. And then my next question is, even though Sip had a good year, and, you know, he had a good year because his contract is up. And we know about players like that, like to show up with his contract is about to be up. And then we sign him to a big deal, and then he go back to the same old Sip, and he's not consistent. Then, I mean, do you think we should get, like, another safety, like, in a free agent or, like, another free safety, like, in the third or fourth round later on in the draft, just in case Sip don't be consistent? I just take comments off the air.
All right. Thank you, Desmond. Happy holidays to you as well. Since Logs is not here, John, perhaps you could.
I think Desmond might have seen me working out the last couple of days.
You think so? Yeah,
I think that's where the confusion lies.
If you squint, it could go either way.
It's 120 days till the draft.
Start with Sip. Where do you think they are in terms of their interest in bringing him back?
Well, I think now that it appears that Dave Caldwell's back, I think, you know, if the price is right, you know, if it makes sense financially, I think there's a good possibility he'll be back. I think I hear the contract question some with him. I don't get the idea from being around Sip that the improvement this year was based.
Your mic's drooping.
I don't get the idea of being around Sip that this year's improvement was a contract type thing. I think he's a pretty motivated guy. I think this year's improvement was what we've all talked about. The role that he's playing is more suited to what he's doing. He still is not a great strong safety in coverage, but he played better against the run. He played well enough where you think, okay, we re-sign him. If we don't, then we've got to go draft it or go find it. Is there really impact available at that spot that's going to improve you dramatically? Is it worth it? Are there other spots you want to go
get? Well, you could, and you don't know how they feel about James Sample either,
True.
Who hasn't been able to stay healthy. But I think they, had he been healthy, may have overtaken Sip over the last
Sure.
couple of years. We just don't know.
But you're also talking about a guy who's played six or seven games.
Understood.
Who hasn't been, so there's no way you can go in thinking James Sample's our strong safety.
No, but he could, be part of the, he could be part of the picture.
Right, and what you don't know is, are they thinking that, and it's, okay, we've got a certain price point for Sip. We're not going to pay him elite strong safety money. Will he get that? That's one of those things that as you get closer to the combine, I think you'll get more of a sense for how the market will play out on that one.
As far as, you know, with the fourth overall pick right now, you know, the positions he talked about, defensive end, lineman, I assume he means O-line.
Right.
Or safety. I'm not a Jabril Peppers guy. I'm not taking a safety with the fourth pick in the draft.
Right.
Not with this team. I haven't studied all the prospects out there, but it seems to be that if you're not getting Myles Garrett in the top five, there may not be another pass rusher worthy of a top five selection
right.
this year. And it doesn't seem to be, it seems to be the consensus that no offensive lineman is worthy of a top five pick this year. So
yeah.
You're going to pick somebody.
Right.
Maybe it will be one of these game breaking running backs, and maybe they'll like one of these other positions better than the consensus is as well.
I'll be honest with you. I don't dig deep into the draft until the Senior Bowl. I know some of the names you're throwing out there. I've looked at it. Philosophically, I'm not a running back in the top 10 type guy. If your offensive line is not ready for that, the only way you favor it is if it's a scenario like you just said, where none of the other positions that you believe are top 10 sort of picks are good enough to warrant it, and you have a mega running back who you really think can help, then maybe. But that's just me.
All right, let's get Dave in St. Augustine next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, fellas. My point of view on it is, well, kind of how I've rationalized what's happened this year, is kind of like a sophomore slump, where Blake's first year, we all kind of knew he needed a lot of work, and the roster was still very young and obviously under early stages of the construction, where last year, if they were to build off of the momentum he had last year, it would have required a lot more work, not feeling like, based on the numbers they put up last year, they were moving in the right direction. They did put up some numbers, but anybody that watched the Jaguars knew that they couldn't do anything that they needed to do when they had to do it. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't convert third downs. They couldn't score in the red zone. This offense was so far behind, you know, including the quarterback, where everybody thought it was coming into it. Any coach should have known that they would have had to put in extra work to get where they wanted to do to build off the momentum. I'd love nothing more than for Blake to be the guy, but there absolutely has to be another plan A going into next year.
All right. You know, if you say there's another plan A, that means that he's not the guy. Right. If plan A means that's the plan, right? I mean, if you're saying there should be other contingencies in case, I can get behind that. The one thing I'll say, when you say the coaching staff should have known that more work was required, the coaching staff's limited to the amount of time that the National Football League collective bargaining agreement allows them to work with players. They can't just say, hey, guys, let's spend an extra month working on this. You know, most quarterbacks don't have to go off and work with a quarterback's coach in the off season, you know. So the fact that he does is a drawback, because it to me, it brings up the question of sustainability. Are you going to have to do this every single year, and will the mechanics break down when you get under live fire? But really, when you frame it that way, you know, the coaching staff should have known that more work was required. Trust me.
And Blake,
don't think they're not working here. Right. You know, they are, but they're limited in how much time they can spend with these players.
Especially in the offseason.
I mean, right,
that's
what I mean.
There is a certain amount of time you can do.
I think that's what Dave was referring to, off-season work heading into 2016.
Right. Yeah, it's not like they told Blake, hey, you're good. Don't worry about it. Yeah, I mean, it was clear off-season work was needed. There's a limit to what they can say. Also, Blake didn't go to California very much, but he did work with the receivers here. It's not like he absolutely did nothing between January and April 15th. The issue with him is I don't think he really realized that the mechanics were going to get so squirrely during training camp because in the offseason when you watched him, there wasn't this feeling watching him in OTAs and minicamp of, wow, this is just awful. You know, you didn't have that. And even early in the preseason, early in training camp, you didn't get that. It really didn't happen until training camp got going late in that and early in the season where it was, whoa, this is not really what you're looking for. So I think from listening to him this season, it feels like he got that message, that even though it felt okay at times in the off season, that he may need a little more tightening the bolts every offseason than he maybe realized going into last season.
All right, we got to take a time out here. John Osier is along with us. I'm Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you as well. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. 641-1010 is the number. Phone lines remain open to you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Congrats to Jalen Ramsey. He was named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week for tackles, four pass breakups, and a pick six to cap off a win spoiling the Titans' playoff hopes. That was the first ever pick six by a Jaguars rookie. Ramsey is also the first Jags player to win the AFC Defensive Player of the Week since fellow FSU player or alum Telvin Smith, Week 7 of 2015. He also joins Telvin as the only rookies in franchise history to win the AFC Defensive Player of the Week honors. The Jags ring in the new year against the Colts this Sunday at 1 o'clock from Indy. With your Jaguars Daily Update brought to you by JOI, I'm Tyler Devitt.
Make Monday feel like game day with Post Game Monday.
We got the W. I thought that mattered. A big one.
Expert analysis of Sunday's game all day. Brought to you by Dandy Foods, home of the classic Cuban. Everybody loves a classic on 1010XL.
This is Malik Jackson, and you're listening to the only weekday show dedicated to your Jacksonville Jaguars. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
All right, thank you, Malik. I got this one on the text line. I assume this is what they want your bumper music to be. Be Good Johnny by Men at Work. Remember that song?
I love Men at Work. Are you kidding me?
Circa like 1983.
Yeah, 82. Yeah.
82, 83.
Summer of 82.
It was junior high.
Because it was summer from my senior year.
Is that right?
That's Men at Work. I loved them.
That was my band. Band. In fact, the rumor was the signs you see on the side of the road used to say Men at Work.
Right.
And that they got stolen so frequently that they changed them. Now they say Men Working. I don't know if that's true or not. But I remember that being a story at the time, that people were like stealing them for their dorm rooms.
I might have been around an incident like that.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah.
Did you steal?
I did not.
Come on.
I did not.
It's all right. Statue of Limitations is you heard about it. I probably stole a street sign or two back in my day. Got to admit.
I've been around it.
I was a scofflaw.
Yeah, I've been around it.
I was a bad kid.
I know they're, you know, like in Colorado, they don't put up the mile marker 420 anymore.
Is that right?
They just don't.
Colorado 420.
It's like 419.9.
Is that right?
Because it would get stolen way too much.
Of course it would.
Yeah.
It'd be wrecks all the time.
I might have heard about a guy.
let's see here. Question for John Osier here. What were the first moves made be after the final game? Will you see a coaching hire, or will you see some bigger name players cut? Wouldn't you wait? You'd see the coaching hire.
Oh, yeah,
first,
you see the coaching hire.
Because they're going to weigh in on the roster.
Well, mainly because of timing and roster management reasoning. There's no reason to make the roster moves immediately.
Right.
So why would you?
Right. Like, for instance, we talked about Julius Thomas yesterday. He's got a $3 million will be guaranteed of his 2017 salary on March 13th.
Right.
You've got until March 13th to figure it out.
Right. So,
exactly.
And that's clearly one where, okay, you're Dave. I'm speaking purely hypothetically here. And the day after the season, you release Audric and Thomas. And the head coach was like, oh, I like those guys. You know, so why would you?
Right. Why'd you get rid of that guy?
Or you.
I had plans for him.
Yeah. And so that would be silly. You would never release equity until you know whether the equity is wanted by the guy you're going to be working with.
Or if you can flip it for something, you know. I mean, their trades aren't very often done in the National Football League. But, yeah, you're going to try to
get
everything.
There's just no reason to do it. So it would be coaching first, and that gives the coaching staff and the GM time. We're all very familiar with the roster here because we've covered it. We know it. Dave's familiar with it. But if you're going to hire, you know, whoever it might be, Kyle Shanahan, Mike Smith, Coughlin, whoever, there is a time where they will disappear for a couple of weeks and the staff will immerse themselves in the roster and try to get an idea for who these guys really are and what they want. So you wouldn't make any moves, and it'd be silly to make any moves until that process is done. And then after that happens, then you see the slew of moves. You see guys released. Then you start getting an idea about what your roster is going to be. And that's the process that Caldwell took when he first got here. It wasn't like Caldwell got hired on January 12th and the press releases about guys came out the next day. It was a couple-week period, and then there was a week where, okay, we're making these moves now. It's time.
Adam Schefter on WEEI in Boston this morning, radio station up there, and they were discussing Jimmy Garoppolo and whether or not it would be it would behoove a team to try to pry him away from the Patriots and how much it would cost. We've said this all, and people, you know, call up.
Fifth-round pick, right?
Oh, sure, fifth-round pick, maybe a sixth, a conditional sixth.
Throw in Koyak?
Someone called up a couple weeks ago and said, why don't we give a fourth-round pick for Phillip Rivers? Yeah. And my response was,
awesome.
Yes, right. Why don't we? Why cool. why did we wait this long to do that? Was that
why stop Bradford, there? Why not give it up for Brady?
If Sam Bradford is going to draw a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick, then guys who are actually good are going to cost you a lot more than that. I mean, why would San Diego give up Phillip Rivers? And I've heard people say, oh, you know, he doesn't want to be there and da-da-da. He doesn't get the pick. Right, I mean, in the end, he can play or not play, and they're
great.
Not
going to
give him away for nothing, and he's under contract. So, but Garoppolo, according to Schefter, the starting price begins at a first and a fourth round pick. So, for all the people out there who are saying, you know, let's go get Josh McDaniels and then trade for Jimmy Garoppolo because he's worked with him, that's the beginning price. Your top five pick in the draft and an additional fourth round selection.
Which, you know, again, if you, to your core, believe that this guy is that kind of a quarterback, then really the first round pick wouldn't bother you. You're giving up
because
that kind of,
you would draft a guy like that anyway,
sure.
Right?
At that point, if you're throwing in a fourth round, you know, if you think he's the guy, that's worth it.
But this is not a question of a create competition situation. If you trade a first round pick this offseason, you're anointing that guy the starter coming in. Dave Caldwell's they're not going to get Garoppolo. I'll just tell you that right now.
I agree with that.
They're not going to get him.
Right.
He's going to cost too much. And Dave Caldwell, if he has any say in the matter, is not going to bring in a guy and demote Blake Bortles right off the bat. He will create a situation where wherever the quarterbacks are, whoever they are, compete, play it out, let the offseason determine who the best player is, but you're not going to bring in a guy under those circumstances then to put in that type of situation. You're not going to spend a high first and a high fourth round pick and say, hopefully you can beat out the guy who's been underperforming for
that us. Move isn't about competition. That move would be about anointing.
Exactly. And I don't expect the Jaguars to make that kind of move this
Again, the only way they would do it is if the head coach and Shad said, this is how we're doing it. You know,
oh, sure. Shad could order that. If an incoming coach said, you know, if it was McDaniels and he said, look, I'm telling you, I can win big with this guy. See him every day in practice. You guys have the talent. Give me a guy who's going to be consistent at the QB position. He's the guy. I'm telling you, if you make this move, if you don't make it, you're going to regret
it. That's when the marching orders change.
Right.
But
it
I
would
don't
have
think
to come
happen.
Like that.
I would think, yeah.
the kind of deal.
It'd be a very persuasive conversation to have that happen.
Right. And I quite frankly, I don't know if Jimmy Garoppolo is right. worth that. Has he played well in his brief little bit? Who doesn't play well up in New England,
sure.
honestly, right? I mean, Jacoby Brissett played well within his capabilities.
Yeah, why not give it a first round?
He won games anyway.
Brock Osweiler beat the Patriots last year.
Right. And that's always the thing that stops those trades from getting pulled off when they stop. You have to make your decision.
Here's a post from Vic Carucci of the Buffalo News. Obviously, they have a coaching vacancy as well after they fired Rex Ryan. Story recently posted, I believe, is this earlier today, Tyler, this went up, or yesterday? It's had to be in the last day.
This was just about 25 minutes ago on BuffaloNews.com. Yep.
Okay, here's a quote. There's every indication from within one Bills drive, says Carucci, that they're settled on sticking with Anthony Lynn beyond the interim head coach status he has for Sunday's season finale against the New York Jets. So Carucci is saying that Lynn is, they already know Lynn's their guy.
And that would add up because you've heard reports for how many weeks about Rex. So you go ahead and get started, you make your decision. I mean,
Anthony Lynn has a growing reputation in National Football League circles. More
that
Jones
would feel
Trude
a little bit like the dirt cutter situation last year in Tampa. So I mean,
right? We've got the guy on the staff. Let's get rid of the head guy because the guy who is orchestrating the offense is more valuable to our success right now. And they did fire Greg Roman, and that running game really took off under Anthony Lynn this year. So
that makes logical sense. That wouldn't be one where you went, "What in the heck are they doing?" It would be okay. That makes sense in terms of. The chronological order of what happened.
Which would lend credence to the theory that if the story that came out about, what it was, maybe 10 days ago, that Tom Coughlin would top their list was maybe inspired somehow by Tom Coughlin's representation, right?
Savvy move,
absolutely a savvy move, but, you know, don't believe everything you hear or read at this
time. I had heard even, like, dating back to last training camp from people who were in that Buffalo and Tom is something that you've heard all along, even before that. But you hadn't heard the top of the list thing until that came out.
Right.
So,
well, we'll see. If you're a Tom Coughlin aficionado, if you want him here in Jacksonville, you hope that Anthony Lynn goes out and kicks some butt this weekend, right?
Yeah.
And instills confidence in the Bills to retain him as their full-time guy going forward. We got to take a time out here. We'll get more of your calls coming up at 641-1010. If you'd like to weigh in on the question of the day, it is this. Did Blake Bortles' performance this past weekend against the Titans reinstill confidence in you, in him, or do you believe it was just a fluke? And there are plenty of shades in between on the spectrum as well. You can share your thoughts with us on the Jaguars Today Facebook page or hit us up on Twitter as well, 641-1010 on both the text line, driven by Duval Ford, and the phone lines here. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and John Osier with you. Coming back to Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, let's get to it. The state in football history for December 28th. We go back to 1947. The Chicago Cardinals defeated the Philadelphia Eagles 28-21 in the NFC or the NFL title game on that date. They always played a lot earlier back in the day. 1952, the Lions beat the Browns 17-7. Likewise, in the NFL championship game, they called it in 1958 the greatest game ever played. It was the first nationally televised National Football League game and also the first game that went to overtime. It happened to be for the NFL championship as the Baltimore Colts were playing the New York Giants, and with about 2 minutes to go, Johnny Unitas led them down the field to a game-tying field goal, tied at 17. Giants got the ball to open up overtime, couldn't do anything with it, so they punted to the Colts to the 20-yard line. Unitas drove them down into what should have been easy field goal territory, but he called his own plays. He didn't want to settle for a field goal, and he threw a pass to the 1 yard line where his receiver ran out of bounds, and it set up one of the most memorable plays in NFL history.
Unitas gives to Amici. The Colts are the world champions. Amici scores. A most dramatic finish in professional football.
1 yard run for Alan Amici.
Threw a high risk pass to get him to the one. Unitas did. He was asked after the game why was, you know, about throwing it. And he said, if you know what you're doing, you don't get intercepted.
Do you think it was a high-risk pass? Have you seen the pass? I watched that play.
It was considered at the time a high-risk. I mean,
passing was probably considered
right.
a high-risk.
It was to the sideline, though.
It was to the sideline. Right. And the guy, his momentum carried him out at the one-yard line, right. basically.
But they asked him, and he said, if you know what you're doing, you don't get intercepted.
It's funny because I was listening to this morning to various broadcasts of the game for the play, and they raved about the pass. It was a simple little out pass. I mean, it was
simple
nothing,
now, baby.
Right? Well, right. And the ball was like a watermelon back right. then. But they're like, United shows his greatness with an amazing pass. And it's like, really, dude?
Well, but if you – it was, again, it's like anything. Nobody else was doing it that way then.
Right, but Raymond Berry had like 12 catches in that game. It wasn't like he wasn't slinging it all over the place that day. And, you know, it wasn't like they had right. three forward passes in the 1958 season. But it was still odd to see them throwing
right.
when all they needed was a field goal to win the title. And then United's reaction, he just basically turns around and just walks off the field like nothing happened. And there
Johnny
he goes.
You, baby.
Into history. Famous birthdays for this date, 1959. You think Jalen Ramsey had a good rookie season? How about Everson Walls, the Dallas Cowboys? How many interceptions did he have as a rookie?
I want to say it was 12.
How about 11?
Okay.
You went a little high on that one. 11 interceptions as a rookie, four-time Pro Bowler, one-time first-team All-Pro. He turns 57 today. Born on this date in 1972. Maybe the greatest kicker of all time, and certainly clutch kicker, Adam Vinatieri, will probably go to the Hall of Fame one day, joining Jan Stenerud as the only kickers in the Hall. Only a three-time Pro Bowler, but he's most known for his postseason heroics.
Yeah, but he's going to kick until he's 73.
Well, he's 44 so now,
right.
and he's still kicking well, so he may kick for another few years. And also born in the state in 1982, Cedric Benson turns 34 years old today. He was the fourth overall pick in 2005. It was a draft. Top five guys were skill position guys, offensive skill position guys. Who were they? Who were the top five guys in that draft? Should be easy because he was one of three running backs in the top five.
What year was this?
That was Smith's year, right?
2005.
That was Alex Smith.
Alex Smith
first.
Was one.
I know Cedric Benson.
Cedric Benson was four.
that, right.
He was four.
Was that Calvin Johnson's year?
It was not Calvin Johnson's
okay.
year.
Yeah,
it was Ronnie Brown went number two, and his teammate Cadillac
yeah.
went fifth.
That's right.
Braylon Edwards sandwiched in at the number three spot.
Yeah, so Braylon Edwards was not Calvin Johnson.
I can't remember another draft where five offensive skill guys went one through five.
Yeah.
May not have ever happened before, but regardless, that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Washington tight end Jordan Reed is expected to play this weekend against the New York Giants. Reed was held out last week after being completely ineffective but active in weeks 14 and 15. He is expected to give it a go. And this weekend's game, Washington has to have it to keep their playoff hopes alive. The Dallas Cowboys, on the other end, have ruled out left tackle Tyron Smith for this weekend's regular season finale for what is being reported as a sprained MCL in his right knee. They say it's not considered serious, but they are going to hold him out. Dallas has already locked up the one seed in the NFC playoffs. Outside of Smith, the Cowboys are expected to still play their healthy starters this Sunday against Philadelphia. I saw someone who was part of the Philadelphia front office talking about, you know, the decision to play or not play their guys when you have the bye week and everything wrapped up. And they said they did like a study going back through 20 years, and they included the NBA in the study for teams that rest guys, whatever, the 9-10-day layoffs in the NBA. And what they concluded is, there is no conclusion.
Right.
You're not better off. You're not worse off playing the guys, which made him go to, he went towards, then don't play them.
Right, because the only thing that could happen is bad.
Yeah, then it's just injury that you're risking by putting those guys out there.
Yep. Once Tyron Smith went out of that game, I thought Dallas's whole Week 17 approach ought to change.
Say what you want about momentum. This is a game of health in the playoffs.
Dak Prescott can go ahead and play one series, hand off a couple of times. If you really – I wouldn't play Ezekiel Elliott. I don't see the point. I just don't get it. I mean
– You don't want to get him 179?
Look, no.
Plus, you can't rest all of them anyway.
You can rest your key ones.
Right.
Tyron Smith
is key. No, I agree.
I remember when the Jags went to Houston on the final game. Was it 2007, right? When they went to Houston, I think it was the final game of the year. Top players weren't even active on that day.
It is a game of health and a game of rest in the playoffs. And better to be fresh, because you can be worn out. It's better to be fresh going in.
A guy like Ezekiel Elliott, it's not like he isn't used to this. You play a college season, you take a month off, and you play a bowl game.
It's a great topic for around the horn. Yeah, I mean, cause it'll be debated. But you rest him because you don't want those guys hurt.
Right.
It's a talent-based league, and in the playoffs, you want to be healthy.
I mean, you can even look at, if you want to, what happened with Oakland this week. I mean, they're up big.
You think?
Well, you know, the thing is, if you're trying to win the game, there's 11 minutes to go in the game, and teams have come back three scores in 11 minutes.
Absolutely.
It's happened in the National Football League. So if you're trying to win the game, you got to decide, what are we going to do?
The Colts made an 8-point game at some point in that game, so it was clear it really wasn't over when he
Sure, but, you know, and they did need to win, so there's that. So, you know, the question is, should they have been running the ball, though, with 11 minutes left and trying to just burn the clock, and maybe that would have been the better approach for them, because right now, you know, the AFC playoff picture is a grim lot at the quarterback position.
Yeah, except for Brady.
Well, no, I mean, Brady and Roethlisberger,
the thing, right.
There's no question. I mean, those guys.
It certainly feels like one that will be decided by those two guys.
I don't know. I still think KC's the team. That's because I picked them in the preseason. Yeah. But I do. I think Kansas
City. You're like a Wolverine on that pick.
You know, why not? I feel better about that than the Seattle Seahawks pick that I made in the NFC. I mean, they.
And your 9-7 Jags pick.
Yes. Much.
Seattle is just.
Much better.
I can't figure out who they are. It's up and down and up and
they
down.
They get killed sometimes.
Wouldn't surprise you if they lost in the first round. Wouldn't surprise you if they were playing the Super Bowl.
Wouldn't surprise me if they got blown out in the first round, honestly.
But then again, if you're sitting there on the week in the championship game.
Shouldn't shock you if they're going
and you
to see
Super Richard
Bowl,
Sherman
right.
running his mouth after the win.
Right.
That wouldn't shock you.
Nobody believed in us.
Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, they could do it or they could get blown out. They're one of those teams.
Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing to be sitting here debating what should we do in week 17? To protect the key Jaguars as they get ready to make a little postseason run right here.
Yes, it would.
It would be a phenomenal, phenomenal thing.
We're not doing that today.
No, we're not. We could. We could play for 10.
Let's just do that.
If you want to. Who should they sit this week?
Get into a heated debate over it. Your face gets all red.
Oh, no. They should play these guys. Come on. Rest versus Rust. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in here. Jalen Ramsey, we touched on it before you got here with us, winning Player of the Week award.
Yeah.
Probably not the last one of these that he's going to win.
No, and again, you don't want to overstate things, but yeah, I think it's the first of many such awards. And this is a guy who, you know, a Jaguars fans certainly saw it in the first 13 games, and they saw glimpses of it. But the last two have been unbelievable. I mean, you're talking about a guy who has made impact plays from the cornerback position. Multiple plays in both games that you can cover good cornerbacks for 16 games, and they don't make as many impact plays as Ramsey has made in each of the last two. You follow? I mean,
no, I do.
That's how rare it is from the cornerback position. It's hard to impact games from that spot, and he's done it against Houston. He did it when the team wasn't even generating pass rush, and usually a corner is going to get plays based off a pass rush sometimes. This kid's unbelievable.
You wonder if he'll have...
His ability to impact.
Is he ever going to have the opportunity to have that many impactful plays back-to-back again? Because what happens when these guys get to a certain point, they don't get thrown at nearly as often.
And that's only going to become a factor for him without question.
You continue... Look, as well as we feel he's played here, and I think he has, came into 2 weeks ago without an interception on the season. So it wasn't like every... offensive coordinator was quaking in fear of Jalen Ramsey. I think they're respectful.
They weren't quaking, but they weren't thrown at him at times, too.
Certainly.
You know what I mean? So that's quake.
Right. I don't know about the – I don't know if you're quaking in fear when a guy hasn't had a pick all year long.
The Raiders didn't throw at – I mean, teams came in and at times were not throwing his way.
Understood. But look, he's also been beaten. So I'm not trying to downgrade Jalen Ramsey this year. Tremendous – rookie season. But
certainly it will change now. Once you start getting this sort of notoriety, it's why you better have somebody good on the other side because they're going to throw away from him.
Right.
The good news about Jalen is he's good enough against the run where even if teams are throwing away from him, he's going to matter in the defense.
Mm-hmm.
He can make plays on that level and can impact the game in other ways, can get turnover-type plays. We've seen him make I thought before these last couple of games, he had been a good, he had been as good in run support as he had in pass protection. Pass defense. I had noticed him as much there in terms of impact, in terms of making plays where you went, whoa, this kid's special.
Yeah, well, he's a hitter. There's no question about it. There are not many cornerbacks as physical as he is.
And that's what I think takes him to a different level than most, quote-unquote, takeaway cover corners. You can definitely see why people thought he'd be a great free safety.
Oh, no question.
The closing that he had on the would-be touchdown the other day was a remarkable play. It seemed like he floated from the goal line to make that play.
Right.
So he's something.
Is Prince a priority to bring back?
I think it's gonna be like Sip. I don't think he is a multi-year break-the-bank contract priority, but I don't think he'll get that on the open market. So I think he will come back.
I hope so. I mean, because, you know, look, is he as good as Ramsey? Maybe not, but it's doubtful you're ever going to have two that good on the same team.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You could probably
he's a starting caliber
from a lot of the league
and
not get that.
Right.
So, he's a starting corner. He's gotten beat at times, but he is a legitimate, you know, top 40 player at his position in the league. You know, I think they would like to have him back. And a credit to him, his big goal this year was to stay healthy. He missed weeks 2 and 3. I believe with a hamstring injury, if I'm remembering correctly. And so all of a sudden it was that, well, here goes Prince of Mukamara again. Well, the last 13 games of the season, he's accomplished his goal. He's shown he can be durable, and he has shown what he can do when he's on the field. So, yeah, I think it'll be a priority unless the contract just gets out of hand, which you're not getting the feeling that it will.
All right, let's take a break here. Oh, you will come back and take a look at some of your responses on the fan feedback spotlight over the next couple of segments here, asking you about Blake Bortles and where your confidence level is in him after his performance against the Titans, or do you see it as more of a fluke? Are you in wait-and-see mode? It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday for all-size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, even industrial plumbing, septic systems, you name it. If it has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter will have the solution. Same-day service, weekends included, so you're not waiting around for the problem to get solved. The right people with the right equipment. It's a simple formula, and it's served Metro Rooter well, and it's helped them serve you here in Jacksonville since 1978. Visit MetroRooter.com for more information or call 695-1911. That's 695-1911 for Metro Rooter to solve all of your plumbing issues. Our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars Today, right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, if you want to get in with Johnny O, 641-1010, the way to do it, midday chalk.
And who doesn't?
At noon. I don't know.
I mean, what do you think about it?
I've had enough. I was just telling you, you know, one of our favorite things to do on road games is go rifling through your cubby hole and see what is new and interesting down there.
Yeah. Be careful.
Might want to invest in a lock.
Yeah, well, I'll change my habits now.
A little lockbox now. We don't. We're like, anybody who's got a cubby hole as opposed to an office, Tony, you can't have anything worth stealing, really.
That's
you know?
That's a really good point. That's the last step before you're out the door.
But honestly, you're the big winner in all this, right? Because you've got the cubby hole. You're at the end of a hallway. You've got your own space, your desk down there, as opposed to having to share a room with Shadrick and Sexton and PCAV.
My strategy
Max
is
Hockman,
I figure if I have the least appealing desk, then there's less of a chance that somebody will want that and they will get rid of me.
Yeah, I will walk out and I'll think I have something to say to John Osher, and I'm like,
way
I don't really want to walk down that to that scary part of the building.
Yeah,
that
people look down there and
decrepit part of the building.
The first time I saw it, I thought it was punishment. I didn't know it was a choice.
First time I saw it, I thought it was a closet.
Hey,
which turns out I was right.
Meet you at the closet. There you go. We got these back-to-back in on the text line driven by Duval Ford today. We're asking folks about Blake's performance and what that does for their impression of him, their confidence in him. This one, Jordan from Virginia weighing in on the text line. He says, I just keep looking back to last season. I just don't see Blake putting up those numbers on accident. Yes, he stunk this season, but I would say it was a snowball effect that just didn't stop. He will get it right this offseason and put the Jags in the driver's seat of the AFC South next year. That is the high confidence end of the spectrum right there. you know, we've talked about his numbers last year, and I don't think you put him up by accident, but the conditions were there for him to put up some big totals because they were behind a lot. Yep. They're throwing a lot. He led the league in interceptions. Look, all you have to do, go back and look at history. There are plenty of quarterbacks that had a peak year that was so far above what they did the rest of their sure. career that when you say it didn't happen by accident may not be the right word, but it may be by far the best you'll ever see right. him. It's not a guarantee, but I'm thinking Scott Mitchell. I'm thinking Josh Freeman. Right. I mean, I'm sure there are countless others that had that one big season, maybe even a Pro Bowl season, and never approached it ever again.
The reason to worry is well established. You know, he had a good year, not a great year last year. And by that, I mean a lot of the yards were late in games. A big difference this year on that front, you had seven games in a row that were decided in the fourth quarter and some games early on decided in the fourth quarter. Well, last year the Jaguars were far behind in a lot of those situations. This year those games were a lot closer. So defenses are playing much more honest, if you will, giving much less. And that is, I think, one of the reasons that the touchdowns are down. All those things are out there. He's had, 48 games-ish as a starter now, in that range, 45. It's there. There is a case for the flashes that he's had, one of them the other day, some through this season, a lot last season, that gives people some hope that he can still be the guy. Now he has to build on that hope. I think there'll be competition next year. I don't know how severe it'll be. But the game the other day is the reason that there's still a glimmer of hope.
The follow-up text to that, different person sent this one in, said, "My confidence in Blake won't be restored until he can perform like that in meaningful situations like games that matter, game-winning drives, etc. Garbage games, garbage stats are meaningless. Blake's biggest issue seems to be not being able to handle pressure situations and just playing and not being uptight when it counts, which is a problem for an NFL quarterback." I think,
and that's absolutely a legitimate concern.
Yes, right, because the this year there were times when he was moving the ball, moving the offense, and you get down to the fourth quarter and you go 3-and-out, 3-and-out, 3-and-out. Right?
Until the other day, fourth quarter had been atrocious for about two straight months.
Exactly.
And that's not all because of Blake, but he's the quarterback.
Right, he is the quarterback. And it's not necessarily all because of the circumstance or the pressure of the moment or anything like that. But it's when you look at it and it happens that consistently, you got to wonder if it's not a significant factor in it.
The other day was the first legitimate that's the wrong word, legitimate. But it was the first time they had taken possession in the fourth quarter and gone down and scored a touchdown in the fourth quarter in a close game since Chicago. And they had the number was in the 20s of the opportunities they had taking the ball in the fourth quarter with the chance to lead, tie, or ice the game. They had not done it. That is a pressure point for a quarterback. It's when he must perform. He hadn't. The other day he did. So above everything else we're talking about, that's where he has to improve.
The follow-up text to that, and it's not they're all from different people.
Sure.
You had the very positive guy said, "Hey, I think he can get back to I still have a lot of confidence." And you had the guy said, "You know what? I need to see this repeatable in meaningful type situations." And then followed up by a three-word text, "Send Blake packing," which look, I understand that sure. feeling. If you feel like you've seen enough in your estimation to judge it, I'll say this, if you think that's a realistic possibility, you're going to be disappointed because they're not going to send him packing this offseason.
Well, and the reason, I shouldn't say the reason, a reason that they're not is that's a great three-word text, but it's followed up by, and do what?
Brandon Allen.
Well,
I'm guessing. I don't know.
And
or Garoppolo.
There are many
or,
things
or
that you throw in there.
Right.
From the team's perspective, are the things you throw in there things that you can do, things that you believe are better options, and that's what remains to be seen.
Other than a team, other than going out and acquiring a quarterback, right? Let's say they did trade for a Garoppolo, which I
get
already it. Said we don't think that's likely to happen. But other than acquiring a guy and then having some team come to you and say, "Hey, we give you this for Blake," right? And it would have to blow you away. I can't see any scenario where they send Blake packing. They're just not going to cut Blake Bortles next year.
Well,
the fourth year of his rookie deal is guaranteed.
Correct.
He's going to get that money from him anyway. And honestly, it would not be smart business to send him.
It's very
packing.
Similar to our conversation about an hour and a half ago about when you would get rid of a Julius Thomas if you think that's going to happen. Well, you don't do it until you have to. Well, with Blake, very similar. Why would you get rid of a guy who has produced on some level in the NFL?
Is still young.
Yeah. To release him would be, you know, laughable at this point.
Of course.
If you had a good trade, well, it then comes down to what do you consider a good trade? And that's when – I don't think that'll happen. That's a very unlikely scenario that somebody comes at you with, hey, we want to give you a top 10 pick for Blake. Why would you at this point?
Right. Who would do that?
If the Jaguars did that for somebody who had played as inconsistently as Blake, people would go nuts. So that's not going to happen. So Blake Bortles is going to be on the roster next year. The question is he the guy?
I think it's the overwhelming likelihood that he's the opening day starter for the Jaguars. That's just reading the tea leaves. It's pretty simple. I don't think Dave Caldwell goes out and gets I don't think he gets an anointed guy, as we've talked about. Right. If you trade a high first round pick, you're anointing that guy coming in. Could they bring in a kind of a middling type veteran? Because I don't see him also spending $10 million a year on a guy in free agency just to have him, quote, compete at the position.
Yeah, it would be
I would love Tyrod Taylor to be in here to compete. I just don't know what the market's going to be
cost?
For Tyrod Taylor. At what cost?
Right.
And is Tyrod Taylor going to have another option to go to a team that says, hey, you know what, if we had a little bit better quarterback play, we could be a contender.
And even if you're talking about a draft, which – again, everything you see is that there's probably not that guy in the draft.
And that's the thing. That's what I'm saying.
But even if there was, would you start him off the bat or would you?
Maybe not. Maybe not. But I heard the guys on the drill talking about this morning. Do you want to hitch your wagon to Tyrod Taylor? I'm just using him as an example. No, he's not shown me that he is a surefire franchise quarterback. But right now, in this moment, I want to win games in 2017 as well. And could he be a better option next year? Absolutely, he might be a better option than what they have right now. Certainly, in a fair competition, might beat a man up.
Right.
I just don't think.
But are you going to pay $12 million?
Right. Are you going to find that out? I don't think you will, and so I don't think you're going to have that type of guy. It's going to depend on what the market is for some of these veteran quarterbacks.
Yeah, and
out
if
there.
Glennon's going to get $12 million a year, then Taylor, you would think, is going to get $12 million a year.
You would think.
So that's kind of, again, that's the roulette that you play. And to go back to a point you were making
a
moment ago. Is
better than Bortles? I don't know.
I don't know
Nobody
that either.
Knows. Nobody knows.
Right.
Because you just haven't seen him play enough.
Yeah. I guess the theory would be if you hire Mike Smith, who's seen him up close in practice, maybe he thinks.
Sure.
You know,
and there's
maybe
people out there that when I said that went, well, anybody's better than Blake. Well, that's not really true.
No, it can get worse.
Anybody's not better.
It can get worse, but I'd be willing to bet that a lot of guys, I would have liked to, if they had Mike Glennon on the roster, I would have liked to have seen what Mike Glennon could have done with this team this year.
No doubt about it. And
I
you mentioned a few moments ago, John, the idea of how many close games they've been in the fourth quarter, and Blake just hasn't gotten the job done.
Absolutely.
On NFL.com, they break up the situational stats that they have. They do it by quarter, and then they have a separate category for fourth quarter within 7 points for your quarterback. In the fourth quarter within seven, Blake is completing 50% of his passes for 4.9 yards an attempt, 3 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and just 15 first downs. That's a first down on 20% of his passes. You compare that to basically he averages a first down on 1 of every 3 passes outside of that situation, and it drops almost 15% when he gets put in that tight game in the fourth quarter.
It's been a there's a few defining issues this season. Turnover ratio was one of them. That stretch of games for 7 games – that I think really created that stat Tony's talking about and created the 7-game losing streak after Oakland and Tennessee is another of the things that when you write the obituary on this season will be in the top part of the story.
All All right, he is John Osier along with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey, Jaguars Today. One segment to go. We'll bring in Dr. Stephen Lucy from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute to give us a look at the Week 17 injury report. Also go through some of the Twitter and Facebook responses that we got to our question of the day about Blake Bortles and his performance. Raising your level of confidence, or do you think it's a fluke? We'll weigh in on those when we return in the moment on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Congrats to Jalen Ramsey. He was named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week this morning. Four tackles, four pass breakups, and a pick six to cap off the win over the Titans 38-17, the first ever pick six by a Jaguars rookie. He's also the first Jaguars player to win the honor since Telvin Smith Week 7 of last year, and only the second Jaguar cornerback ever to win it, joining Rasheen Mathis. Over the past 4 weeks, Ramsey's been targeted 35 times, only given up 12 completions for 145 yards, as well as being giving up a 24.1 quarterback rating and is PFF's highest graded cornerback in the NFL over the past 4 weeks. With your Jaguars Daily Update brought to you by JOI, I'm Tyler Devitt.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, final 15 minutes or so of the program coming up at the top of the hour. The Midday Chalk will entertain and inform you for the next 3 hours here. Do we got any bowl games today?
I think they're just 2 hours.
Two hours today.
Yeah, I think they're on until 2 and then the bowl game.
Yeah, I thought I overshot with entertaining and informing for 3 whole hours.
Yeah, yesterday they were on for an extra half hour. They were on until 3:30.
So they're exhausted.
Yeah, and I think today they can only handle 2.
Say the guys who work 2 hours a day. So, taking shots at other people. Dr. Stephen Lucy here with us. He works the hardest 5 minutes in radio every Wednesday from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. Hello, Doc. How are you?
I'm good.
Did you have a nice Christmas?
I did. I was up at the crack this morning trying to run a few of those pounds off, but
is that
it was
right?
All good.
Brother, I've let myself go for the last 2 weeks of the year. I'm just like, you know what? Just keep it in the positive. Like, I was down like 50 pounds, right?
Now
I'm probably down about 35 pounds, right? And that's okay. You know, if to be a net 35 down throughout football season is a big plus, but come January 2nd, I go right back on it hard.
Yeah, I tell you, the gyms get full. The personal trainer schedules are
full. I don't even need the gym. I just need to get out there and continue my 4 to 6 mile walks every day and tighten up my eating habits. I let them slide by the wayside, but that it's the holiday season, Doc. You got to enjoy life a little bit, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, all right, let's get down to the Jags and how much they're enjoying their rehab efforts to get out there on the football field. Let's start with the hamstring boys. Start with Chris Ivory, who pulled up in the middle of a run, and don't know how severe that was. So you said you thought he was heading out to practice today, so that would be a good sign.
Right, I did. I passed him as I was walking in the building. He and some of his cohorts were headed out to the practice field, so that was a good sign. I think he's going to try, but as you know, he's been struggling with that for about 3 weeks, and then I think this past weekend tweaked it again, and so we're just have to cross our fingers and hope that he'll be able to put it together. They're getting pretty thin at that spot.
They certainly are. Alan Hearns still, obviously wants to play, or they've had ample opportunity to put him on IR if they wanted to. He's dealing with that hamstring as well.
Yeah, and that is absolutely correct. You'd have thought that they would have put him on IR if they hadn't. It had some expectations he'd make it, but as we discussed earlier, it was a fairly severe hamstring in a wide receiver, and that's never a good combination. But he's another one's going to be day-to-day, and we'll have to see. I don't know how optimistic they are, but we'd sure like to see him for this last game.
TJ Yeldon went on IR this week. What do you, in terms of rehab for him, when should he be fully healthy? At what point of this offseason? Is it just a few week deal, a month maybe, or what do you think you're looking at for TJ?
Probably 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, so is that basically then for the next 4 to 6 weeks just rest and get some – how would you treat his ankle?
Well, from what I understand, he had a pretty severe ankle sprain with a bone bruise. And so the bone bruise adds a few weeks to the rehab. But, no, he'll be getting after it, just not running and cutting, but he will be working hard. And I'm sure that, by the next team function, he should be fine.
All right, Denard with a high ankle sprain, what do we know?
Well, Denard, I think, is making progress. These ankle sprains, high ankle sprains, are typically 3 to 6 week injuries. I think he's missed 2 or 3 weeks already. So, you know, as skinny as they are at running back, I know they'll want to get him out there and they'll give it a go later on in the week. And there's a chance on him, I think.
Well, it just looks like a litany of offensive skill guys that we're going here through, because we are a couple of guys dealing with concussions last week, Neil Sterling and Aurelius Ben. Are we optimistic that one or both can return for week 17?
I think Aurelius Ben will probably be back. From what I understand, Sterling is still in the protocol, so not as optimistic on him.
All right, well, we'll wish him the best. Doc, for you, any New Year's resolutions for 2017?
You know, I hadn't quite got to the resolution phase, but I'm sure I'll get there. But I had a great year this past year, and if I can have a similar one, I'll be happy.
I bet you're going to at least one thing you'll do in 2017 is buy some sweet ties, because you always have the nice ties. I like that one that you're wearing today. Very sharp. Doc, good to see you as always. Happy holidays. We appreciate you weighing in every Wednesday throughout the football season and look forward to doing it again in 2017.
Yes, sir. Good to be back.
All right, there he goes. Dr. Stephen Lucy of Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars, with your weekly look at the Jaguar injury report. All right, guys, today, question of the day, asking about your confidence level in Blake Bortles based on his performance this week, or do you see it more as a fluke? Tony, what kind of response do we get?
Here's what we got from Any Given Sunday. I'm convinced that was the real Blake, but he needs to keep doing that to restore the faith. From Duval Doom, made me hopeful because I'm stupid, but the not stupid part of me still doubts him. From Ocho Fisho, no, for some inexplicable reason, this team pressed even when there was nothing to play for. It's because they had lost a bunch in a row. From Jarrell, I won't say fluke, but I still trust Blake about as far as I can throw him. From Alvaro, no, he's got to repeat the same for 64 more games. He's got to, there's that level, 64 more before he'll believe in Blake. From RTC, no, had a chance to lead the team to victory in close games in last quarter and couldn't do it. And from Tavalis, we got fluke. He is too inaccurate to look so accurate in one game. Hashtag Tyrod Taylor.
Here's a couple on the opposite end. I won't get them all on the Facebook page. There's a lot more on the fluke side. But this one from John, he said, no fluke. No, wait, what was it? No puppet. No fluke. You're the fluke. No fluke. Better coaching, and the win has restored some confidence. Doug goes 2-0. That's positive. John, Andre from Ireland says, no. Here's a big fat no from Ireland. If someone changes his opinion on Blake after one decent game, then I call him lunatic. He has to have a good full season to change my mind. Signed, Andre from Ireland. So there you have it, both sides of the coin, so to speak. We know he's going to be in the mix for it. I guess it doesn't really matter what any one person's confidence level is in Blake. It's going to matter what the next coaching staff's confidence level is in
his
Blake.
His completion percentage has now dipped down to just below what it was last year.
Oh, great.
So that
Wait, how did it dip down after this week?
I don't know. I didn't look at it last week.
Okay.
Because it was Christmas week and everything else was going on. So it might have been low and he might have raised it.
I think it had to have gone up. He had his highest completion percentage of the year, I want to say, this week, if I'm not mistaken.
His 12 of 28 the previous week might have dipped it. I mean, it was pretty, you know, I mean,
I forget where it was, but it was. That sounds right. That would have taken it down. So what is it, Tony?
Come on, Tony. This year compared to last year?
Let me pull it up.
I need raw data, and we'll compare
that
to...
It's 0.1 different. So it's essentially the same number. He is...
like 58 point something?
58.6 last year, 58.5 this year. He was 58.9 his rookie year, so it's dropping.
All right, you got his full stats page up right there?
I do.
All right, give me touchdown percentage.
Touchdown percentage is 3.8.
3.8,
down
okay.
from 5.8 last year.
So a high of 5.8. Give me interception percentage.
Interception percentage is 2.7, down from 3 last year, which was down from 3.6 his rookie year.
Okay, I just, you know, by comparison, because people sometimes want the new thing, because they just haven't seen the new thing play poorly for them. Mike Glennon, whose name will get bandied about because he's one of the guys who will have some starting experience.
He's the new thing.
That hits the free agent market. In his first 2 years, when he started a total of 18 games over his first couple of seasons, particularly his rookie year, he started 13 games. He was 19-6 and then 19-9, 10-6, TD interception ratio. His touchdown percentage was 4-6 and 4-9, right, which is – Not as good as Blake last year, but better than Blake this year. Interception percentage of 2.2 and 3.0, which is right around where Blake is as well. Completion percentage was 59.4 and 57.6. So he's the same guy.
Same kind of guy. This one's the one that kind of blew my mind, though, when I was looking at Blake's stats. The QBR, whatever it means, I'm not even exactly sure how they put that thing together, but the QBR from ESPN, they keep that stat on the Pro Football Reference page now. Last year, his QBR, total QBR, was 46.4. This year,
oh dear,
it's higher.
What?
50.6.
Garbage stat.
Like,
it's got to be a garbage
like,
stat.
I couldn't correspond those two in my head. He's 4 points higher this year than he was last year.
Well, who was? We saw there was some game I told you I swore off that stat because there was somebody that had some game that, they graded to be a bad game when he was spectacular.
Was it Rodgers last
was
year?
It? I don't know what it was, but it was yeah, garbage stat. By the way,
bottom line, don't you know with a quarterback whether he played good?
Yeah, you just watched
without
played
the stat.
Well. Yeah.
So
generally, right?
Yeah.
But it's as a way to compare him to his peers and the rest of it. Like, was this game better than that game? It can be interesting if you're using the same criteria. But if you're telling me that Blake was better in any measurable way this year than last year, I don't think that's really the case.
Hard to see that.
John Osier, we will not talk to you on this program, I don't believe, before New Year's. Do you have any Jaguars-related or work-related or just personal New Year's resolutions?
Jaguars-related, you know, it's tough. I run every day. I'm not going to stop doing that. I do the ozone every day, so I'm not going to stop doing that. You know, personally, I think the resolution after football season is always the same to, you know, stop eating ridiculously.
Yeah.
And just get back to a normal way of life.
I'm going to do that for like at least a month.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's probably the annual resolution. I think anybody who sort of covers or is around the season, coaches always say that, you know, that's the annual resolution of anybody who sort of jumps into the football world for 6 months. When you come up for air in January, you look at your eating habits and you sort of shudder at yourself.
I'm thinking of trying
fatball season,
starting with one push-up on January 1st. No, seriously, and
okay,
then go do two the next day.
Yeah,
because all you if mentally, if you're just adding one more than the day before, and you're capable of doing as many as you did the day before, why shouldn't you be able to do one more? One, two, and go all the way to like do 365 on December 31st next year. What do you think? The
likelihood right, yeah.
of me following through on that.
I'm with you until Friday.
You're right. You're with me at least for the first right. 5 days or right. 6 days yeah. of the new year. All right. Happy New Year to you,
you
John
as well.
Osier.
Both and, you guys. Good year this year.
Yes. Hopefully it'll be a good year to cover the Jaguars
Absolutely.
In 2017.
It's always a good year to cover them. Sometimes they don't do as well as you want.
Double-digit victories. That's what we got to get. That's what we got to get. That's it. You know what? Enough. There's not enough of this pussy footing around with the.
Is that your resolution? Is that a guarantee?
It's not a guarantee or a resolution. That's an expectation. That's
wow.
a demand.
Okay.
A demand. How about that? I don't know if I expect it, but that's what you should expect of this franchise. Enough.
I'm with you.
Enough with the.
I'd watch that.
No more baby steps.
All right.
I need some leaps forward, please.
I'd watch that.
In 2017. All right. Anything in particular coming up today or the rest of the week on Jaguars.com?
You know, just. A lot this week of just making sense of what the Doug Marrone approach had to do with the win last week and just how important this game is on Sunday. I think there's some importance to it. And I think there are players and coaches who believe this is an important game for a lot of reasons, even though you're 3-12.
I would agree with that, and let's hope they play as such. I will end with this text on the text line driven by Duval Ford. It should go without comment, but we'll see if you pick up on it. Blake completing one game with accuracy recently is like my broken Rolex reading 1 p.m. all day. It's accurate twice a day, but requires replacement. Well, if it reads 1 p.m., it's accurate once a day, okay?
Right.
And so, and still requires
Guess
replacement.
What? It's worse than you think.
It is, right? It's twice as bad as you believe it to be. All right, that'll do it for us today. Thanks to Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor. For John Osier, for Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. We'll say hello to the boys of the Midday Chalk coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.